Welcome to the Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter @securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
I'll tell you what though, Eric, because you have a full head of hair, it looks much better with the sun on you than it does on...
Is it like a halo effect over me?
Halo, halo, halo.
So welcome to the Great Security Podcast. I'm Dan Ayala. Eric Willey.
Brian Schneebly.
We're outside the... Michigan State game here.
Is that what that background noise is?
Yeah. No, actually, do you remember the movie Sneakers? And they he described it as a cocktail party. That's what it sounds like here.
It does have that sound.
It sure does.
I mean, it's literally like we're at a cocktail party times 20.
Well, yeah.
There's a few people here.
Times 36. I think that's the number of tents here. So for those of you listening on audio, we're here live outside of... Michigan Stadium outside the Big House, and we're gonna try and think of some things to talk about. So Eric, what do you got?
Well, actually, I thought it was kind of interesting that we're sitting at the tent sponsored by Abnormal and Presidio. Pull up Secure World site, and the ad that I got here is from Abnormal Intelligence. So hats off to the Abnormal team for all of their marketing,
for buying the right AI.
I swear to God, that's just coincidental timing. Coincidental timing.
Oh, I just got an email, too. It said, hey, you looked at a white paper from your IP address. Do you need to buy it? No, I'm just
playing. It says, would you like tickets for the game? Would you take a meeting?
Will you take a meeting? Can I follow up with you every day for the next 6 months?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we're going to pick something relevant news, what you sent out, what was it, last night, Dan? We were talking about the concept of an S-bomb coming around again and what that means. Because what was that? OpenSSL.
Oh, the OpenSSL deal. Yeah. So, well, we don't know a lot yet. There's a patch that's going to be coming out, I think, on November 1st. Early in November. And we don't know a lot of the details. But the heads up was given in an attempt to get people to prepare and understand where they have OpenSSL in their organization, because it seems like that need to resolve it is going to come really, really fast.
Right. It's similar to the, and I'm drawing a blank on this one, what was the one that was in the Java?
Heartbleed, and there was...
Dan, I was just going to say, get closer to the mic so I can hear you.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Yeah, my arm is a little bit far away, and so I have to really lean in, and these chairs are very deep, and so... I'm just going to have to lean in like Sheryl Sandberg would say. The goal in talking about this now is to get people to pay attention and look at what they've got in their organization, what they've, how much, where they have OpenSSL, because the time's going to come quickly that they need a patch. And they need to know where the things are.
And I think this is a good example that we show the intricacies of being a security practitioner, right? So if we think about it from an enterprise perspective, in all of the applications that we know of, you might be running an Oracle, an SAP, the big box retailers, you're running Microsoft. But as you get into some of your smaller players, there's so many different components that make up each one of those software platforms that it becomes very tough to understand what is in there, what is the actual business risk that we have to be concerned with. And this one, as it comes out, everybody's now taking a look. All right, OpenSSL. How do I figure out where is that running within the organization? And a lot of times, organizations don't have that library, right?
Well, and it's because there's this term that's been termed around for quite some time now, but really getting some traction, called SBOM, Software Bill of Materials, understanding what it is that is in each of the products that you use and own and build, so that you have a quick inventory. It's as wonderfully mythical as the CMDB is, but it's I think it's even more important than that ever was or is, because you need to know what's running in it to change out a library, change out a change out a package, change out of something, because the patches come fast and furious. And if you don't, you're sitting duck.
Right. And so for those that are, you know, OpenSSL, you may have heard the name, but to give some background on what OpenSSL is. So it's an open source implementation of SSL, SSL is what you would know about if you go in the browser. And you go to a website that is secured, in many browsers you get the lock symbol, or if it has a bad certificate, you get a warning and how you're connecting. So think about it as the underpinning of the web and protecting communication to and from websites and encrypting data flows.
Wow, that's good. Did you just read that?
No.
That's
on the
really
spot. See, that's the beauty of security, having to span both of those sides of the technical and being able to explain the business aspects of it.
Yeah. I was going to say, not only was that impressive, like I was going to reach over and pull my laptop out just so I had it up there to be able to Google stuff. But the fact that you were able to say that just off the top of your head and give a clear definition and understanding to the group.
You don't need Google, you got Eric.
Well, I was originally going to say, I was thinking, what does SSL stand for? And I believe it's Secure Sockets Layer.
Yeah.
And in all actuality, that doesn't, if you're still running SSL, you shouldn't be anymore, because that's actually been sunset with, I think it was a 3.0 that moved over to, now we're getting nerdy here, TLS.
TLS, yeah.
But help me understand. So like companies like Talon and Island that have come out where they're talking about the web browser and building something that's more definitive for the enterprise versus the consumer browser that's used. Is there any relation there to what these companies are now coming out with or pushing? And would they jump on this narrative right now for OpenSSL?
Every company will jump on every narrative if it means trying to sell more things. but I think there's like a few underpinnings. This would be like saying that the mortar company that makes 90% of the bricks in the world didn't make mortar that it made mortar that falls apart, makes the bricks fall apart. That's how this is. OpenSSL is such a deeply entrenched piece. There's a good chance that those companies are also using OpenSSL in some way and fortifying it in additional ways. But it is such an underpinning of how browser-based or point-to-point encryption is happening for those kind of sessions. So, you know, I don't think anybody's immune to this. And it's also nested in so many different places that it's really hard to know where it all is. You can, you know, just there's the ones you can see, but then there's all the ones underneath it that you can't.
Yeah, this one has the potential to be huge. Now, again, as Dan led off with, we don't know a lot about it yet. We just know that something is coming. But if you think about historically, if we were to use Heartbleed and some of those other vulnerabilities, became very invasive very quickly, because we find these libraries used in so many different applications.
Yeah.
And let's be frank, that there's going to be a lot of enterprises that for a long time that you'll hit your big ones that you know up front, but we're all going to be finding those other applications that are out there that we don't yet know are actually running these libraries.
Rather than being Frank, I'll be Dan and say, yes, absolutely. And I will lay odds that there will be a brand name for this, and that there will be a website with a domain name for whatever this is when it comes out. I think that's where it seems to be leaning, that it's heading towards something big and marketable.
Right. So I think this is an opportunity, if we take a step back, and we like to draw it back to, all right, what does this actually mean from a business perspective, and how do we adapt, how do we actually resolve some of these issues? And I think this, at least from my perspective, what I'm hearing, this is why we build an architecture in such a way that we have multiple layers of defense and protection.
Mm-hmm.
So Dan, you and I earlier were talking about web application firewalls. Certainly you get this as you start talking about load balancers and building architectures in a way that a single vulnerability shouldn't be able to decouple the whole chain, become a systemic risk throughout the organization, right?
Yeah, there should be no single points of failure, single points of entry. This is what we've been designing for decades now. So that no one piece gets in. The problem, though, is we've built very optimized systems. We've built very customized systems, and we don't always know what's in there. And it takes time for all those various levels of defenses to be able to be ready to deal with something new. So it's not always a day one that I can have it already, which makes the defense in depth. Perhaps it's a discussion you should have about your defense in depth and the theory on some of these. Can it actually do what you need it to,
right,
when you need it?
So switch over to the practitioner side, Dan, and kind of put you on the hot seat. that if you are trying to get out ahead of this and you're trying to understand where is this running in the business, how would you go about finding that?
It starts with a different, well, it depends a little bit on the types of businesses that you are. If you are a development house, meaning you develop product, any kind of development internally, talk to the developers, say, I want a list of all the packages you're using, and understand if OpenSSL is in there. And then you have to go deeper than that and say, within the packages, you need to look at the packages and say, do these packages use OpenSSL in them? We found this in some of the other issues, that you have these nested things where Java was running jQuery is running deep, deep down, and you don't even realize it. And then, you know, once you have those in parallel, you need to also be looking at your own, at the companies you buy services from. And so, you know, as a CISO, I expect on Wednesday, Thursday next week, to be getting hundreds of calls from customers saying, please confirm that you have patched against this. Please confirm that you are not vulnerable to this. So it means it's going to be a lot of exercise and a lot of query, but I think every SaaS provider, every technology provider is going to get inundated with that question of, please tell me and confirm to me that you are not affected by this.
Yeah, I was going to jump in there because I see this as one of those, especially when we talk, when you were just saying that people are going to be asked the question, can you confirm this? Can you confirm that?
Yeah.
And the hoops that people are going to have to jump through. This just goes back to that next layer of when you talk as a practitioner, the things that you aren't, I don't want to use the word aren't prepared for, but the things you have to be prepared for that are not part of your daily task.
Right.
That when you have to jump through the hoop, sometimes there's no easy way to confirm it.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that will end up spinning a lot of tires, a lot of wheels to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of companies out there that, as you go through, a supply chain on the smaller side, that don't have the resources to be able to turn right around and tell you in 24 hours, 48 hours, yeah, I can confirm to you that, no, we don't have that problem.
And they're going to say what they need to say to keep you doing business.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see that going away. Now, Dan, no. Just for the record, before we started, did you tell everybody exactly where we're at?
I did. I said, we're in a place called Ferry Field, which is a stone's throw, a very long stone's throw, but I can see the big house, Michigan Stadium, from right here. And I can see scads of blue and yellow. Yes, I said that wrong, but I know I said it wrong. And I see scads of green and white. I don't see so much red and white, though.
No, not a lot of red and white today. And you're probably spot on there. There's a lot more maize and blue here. And I think it's only because it's fair to say, for those that aren't watching the video, that I am green and white. I'm a diehard Spartan. I have my helmet on right now. But it hasn't been the season that we planned for. And there's been things that have come up. And just like we were just talking about SSL, the things that happen that come up that you may spin your tires trying to figure stuff out. I feel like we've had some loss, some attrition. People have gone off the field. We've lost some of our key players. Some of those are back today. Now, on the flip side, I am going to poke the bear on the other side of the table. And for those watching, we did put Dan in between us. You know, Michigan hasn't had the hardest schedule this season. Just going to be honest.
It's fair.
And I'm not trying to steer this away from security, because I think there's a lot of relatable security topics that can go into football and preparation and things that you're not prepared for that just come up out of nowhere, and you got to say go into halftime and come out. This being one of them that
like
we were
the tunnel
about.
To the locker rooms.
It's such a good analogy, though, because if you think about it, so I'm taking it back to the security side and right pivoting plan and understanding kind of where do you have to go next. But I think this is why it's so critical that you think about it, security in the light of traditional IT, right? As we think about a lot of traditional IT, thinking about non-operations, capacity management is about projects, making sure that we've got things set up and scheduled. That everything's scheduled, right? You're looking to maximize your capacity, utilization, to turn out projects and all that. But this is why within security, there's got to be elasticity. And I know one of the conversations that we have with our board or the audit committee every quarter, as we talk about the roadmap, is that it's always cautioned that this is what we want to get to, but we don't know what's going to come up that's going to change that. So the schedule can't be locked in stone. Right. And this is one of those great examples. This is now going to pull resources away of something that, instead of working on projects, some other things that we wanted to accomplish, this is now top priority. This is another fire that got lit that we have to put out.
No, and I love that you went there. And Dan, I'll let you jump in, but I love that you went there because that's kind of what I was alluding to, right? And it's true. But then even when you dive into this and management comes back and asks, well, what is it that you've been working on for the last 3 days, 4 days, or what just happened? What was this fire drill, right, that I didn't know about? But then you also have to take the time to be able to explain it logically, just like you were explaining to the listeners, why it's an issue and why you got to be concerned with it. And why your customers on the other side are going to be asking you the same question, why the OEs are going to ask you, the people you do business with, right? So those are the things that come up that you're prepared for, but you're not prepared for.
Right. Meaning, all right, we're 2.5 years into this. What the F's an OE?
Oh, sorry, OE. Original equipment manufacturer for all the automotive listeners out there and also for our Michigan fan base and for anyone that knows me. You can relate everything back to automotive at some point.
This is true. So, you know, just to pivot on something you said there, the fact that there's going to be this influx of work as a result of it. I was having a board discussion just last week, and we were talking about, you know, the level of importance that customers place on security and the way that it's manifesting itself in those conversations. And it comes with, hey, with those calls, with the questionnaires, with the insistence of understanding, you know, how mature your security program is. All of these mean that security isn't just part of business. Security is business now.
Right.
And this week will be another example of that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you think about it, I've always liked the analogy that would the CFO kind of within the organization mention everybody else within the organization, all the different functional areas, as, oh, we got to go talk to the business. No, they would see themselves as an integral part.
Yeah.
Security's got to be seen as the same way.
Yeah.
It's not a checkbox activity anymore. We've moved past the whole idea that, oh, it's just compliance as a baseline and that's it. That's all we've got to do. It's got to be much more ingrained within the whole organization and risk management process.
Yeah, I want to scale on that again one more time, a repeat, that the whole idea of security versus the business, that these are two different entities, is a must-stop activity. Security is business. Security is the business. It is part of the business. And if you're doing it right, you're making security part of the things you build into your products and services and using them as a competitive advantage. So go back to our episode on, is security a competitive advantage? Heck yes, yes, and super yes.
Right, but you got to ask yourself, too, the same question. If you're going through a fire drill every time one of these things comes up and it feels like the house is burning down, right, this is what happens in manufacturing when the production control team doesn't have enough people or the quality team didn't do their due diligence in the beginning and you're constantly fighting production issues and quality issues. And it's always a fire drill to make sure you're not shutting down your customer. If it feels like it's always a fire drill and you're having a lot of them, then either A, you don't have enough people, or B, you don't have the right processes put in place. And this is where it becomes part of the business. These things are going to come up and you got to be ready to fight fires.
It's like hitting your head against the wall. It feels so good to stop. You build a set of processes so that you can actually expect that these things are going to happen and happen regularly, so you're not fire drilling and wasting time every time you
right.
have repeatable things and you just make them happen, or even better, make them self-service so that people can go get them themselves. Think ahead before people come and ask for them, or have the artifacts and give them to them and not have to spend individual time answering it.
Right. So, and it's definitely critical. So I was just pulling up a presentation that I had put together recently and grabbed a headline from the Wall Street Journal. And there was one on there that credit raters look more carefully on how companies respond to cyber attacks. Right. Think about the financial impact of credit ratings to an organization and the money factor being able to borrow capital to fund growth of the company, but cyber is playing a huge impact to that now, and how credit raters are actually looking at organizations and their ability to protect themselves.
Yeah, it's becoming a bigger part of all M&A as well. Now,
right.
Not when you're doing a merger and acquisition, you're actually going in, doing your due diligence and discovery around the financials, but you're also going in now and doing your due diligence around their security posture.
Yeah. Like, I want to know what I'm buying, and I want
yeah,
to know
how you want to know what you're walking into.
Well, anecdotally, I mean, there's been stories out there of organizations that essentially bought themselves a breach.
Yeah.
Right? Because you buy an organization, as soon as it goes public that you are buying another company, that becomes another attack target.
And there's scenarios just right here in Michigan of companies that have been trying to go through acquisition for over a year, but there have been breaches or things that have taken place in discovery that has pushed out that acquisition further and further and further.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I don't want to get off the topic, but spinning it back to football, right? And there is a big game to be played. Going into halftime, I do have to say I'm a little bit concerned that on my side, which is the Spartan side, that we may be going through a fire drill at halftime trying to regroup. We have not looked good on the offensive part of the ball. And on the security side, there's offense and defense, right? I've always said that defense wins championships, offense scores points. I think it's going to be a...
That's pretty bold there.
Yeah, but in security, some people may look at that a little bit different. But I've always said defense wins championships, offense scores points. Today's going to be a brutal test. I mean, this is literally, I look at this as like the ultimate pen test, right? Like, we're going to have a team coming in with a phenomenal run game, trying to poke holes in our defense all day long. And the second you plug all those holes, they're going to find your vulnerability deep and just air it out. It's like the perfect 0 day. Boom! Touchdown!
Or 0 yard line.
Zero, yeah, exactly. So, and I'm not trying to be negative on my own team here, but I do think it's going to be maybe a battle to start with. But coming into halftime, I think we might be in a fire drill scenario.
Well, we can certainly edit this out if you're wrong and change your prediction to be right, no matter what the answer.
I was going to say, I'm going to give my next prediction in like 5 minutes where I'm completely gung-ho and positive, and then we can just pick which one we want to do, kind of like it's reality TV.
It's like the record I had when I was a kid, a little 45 record, and they would like zero in a personal name. Hello. Hello, Thomas. And you could buy the one that said Daniel. And I used to shop. I used to love going to Goodwill because they had great stuff too. But you'd never have the records with your name on it.
Well, Dan, what's your take? You've seen both teams play. And for those listening, Dan lives in Ann Arbor.
I do.
Dan used to be a CISO and practitioner for Michigan State University.
I did.
But he grew up in Wisconsin, and he traditionally wears a lot of red and white.
And graduated from the University of Wisconsin. So
what
go
side?
Go team.
I mean, you don't have to tell everyone what side you're leaning on today, but what do you think it's going to look like at halftime?
Okay, so what do I want to happen versus what do I think will happen versus what will happen? I think Michigan wins this game quite handily. And I think at half, it's
and for those just listening, Brian's face just dropped.
21-7.
All the air just went out.
Guys, turn off the hot dog machine.
Back it up. We got to go.
We're done. We're going home.
It's interesting, though, to use another football analogy. And you talked about showing the playbook, right? And think about that in the context of security. And I know a lot of us that are on the practitioner side like to share a lot on what we're doing. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Should security be, as you think about your incident response plan, think about those different aspects, is that something that you should be showing and publicizing, or is there an inherent sense of security to protecting that?
It depends.
I would expect nothing less than it depends.
I think it depends on who you're sharing it with. As far as colleagues, I think we must share with each other. One of my first experiences in incident response, I was probably 10 years into my career. And I was part of some very mature incident response groups from very large companies, very large money, and some of the most intricate and detailed capabilities. And we shared information with each other under pretty significant NDAs. But it helped us all be better.
Right.
And that's about the attack. It's about the methods. It's about the response methods, everything. And I think as an industry, we need to help each other. That said, as well, it depends for customers. If you're a company that is servicing anybody, I think we've moved to a move. I purposely made sure that my job title now includes the word trust because of exactly that. I think
I already trusted you before that title.
It doesn't take a title. The title doesn't change how you feel. But the trust in there comes in how much of this you share with customers, how much of this you share with the community outside of your company, and how much you're doing it proactively versus waiting to be asked. So I think it's a big change from security as secret sauce and secret squirrel to security is a part of a larger trust regime that is about sharing mostly. But there are going to be things you can't trust. You can't share. That you can't share. And yeah, don't put your passwords into your procedure and then publish them on your public website.
Or your GitHub repo.
For example, yes.
Oh. Yeah, but at the same time, like, team share video. Like, here's our video. Here's your video. You can watch last week's game, right? You can watch 2 weeks ago. But every time you show up, and this goes back to the offensive side and the security side, right? The idea of your threat actors, every week they show up, it's going to be a little bit different. There are certain playbooks that they're going to continuously try and do, right? There's the low-hanging fruit that they're going to go after, right? And you could call that phishing and everything else. But then there's the playbooks where they're putting together their special plays specifically for your business, right? Because they've been trying to prod it before over a certain amount of time. And I think that's where, when you try to draw the correlations to football, right, two teams coming together, both have watched video on each other. Both have, you know, the defense, that's why each team has a defensive coach and an offensive coach. The defensive coach is trying to put his best game plan together for whoever this threat actor is. And this week it's the Wolverines that the Spartans are playing, right? We've seen how good they were last week.
Wait, I thought this was Purdue.
What's that?
I thought Purdue was here today.
Oh, no. And for those listening, too, one of our listeners ran and grabbed me a Sparty American IPA.
That's good. That's good beer.
It should also bring good luck today as well. I mean, it's going to be a battle. But at the end of the day, two teams show up. You try to prepare offensively. You try to prepare defensively. Now, what would you say from an offensive side, from a security side, right, when we talk about tactics and things that are used? Anything comparable that you could give me hints on, Eric, on your team? And I'm not talking the company you work for. I'm talking about your football team that maybe, A, relate to security, or, B, you think that your team is going to do today to exploit my Michigan State Spartans.
Ooh, from an offensive side? I mean, from an offensive side, you're sticking to what works, right? I mean, if you think about it, look back, Are we truly talking about football here, or are we trying to bring this back to security?
A little bit of both, but I'm really interested in the football
context. On the predictions? I mean, if we're going to play a prediction, I think Corum's going to put up some big yards. I think he's going to... So if you want to talk about the vulnerabilities being a hole in defenses, I think the Spartans are going to have a little bit of a hole there, and it's going to get exploited, and there's going to be some high running yards put up.
So you don't think if we go from a perimeter defense instead of stacking the line back to a 4-3 and maybe pull Windham up, right, as an additional guy, that knowing that that's the offensive tactics is going to be to run the ball quite heavy today, you don't believe that we can stop
could,
that?
Could work. So predicated on the idea of being able to pivot, right? That if you were to continue to do that, hey, this isn't working, but we really want to go with this game plan and keep running and it's not working, sure, that holds up. But as soon as you start pitting it, as soon as you start putting a quarterback mobile, as soon as you start throwing it, it starts to break down that defensive strategy.
100%. And relating that back to security, a lot of times that's what happens. Yeah. You get somebody that goes, go ahead, Dan. I was going to say, you get someone that goes, like, run heavy, right? And the second they pivot and you're not ready for it, it is a fire.
And that's when I'm going to pick on and kind of bring that back into strategies, right? Organizations that say, with security, I need to have a 5-year strategy. Really?
I have to have a 30-day strategy and be happy if I make it all 30.
Yeah. What can I predict for tomorrow that I have no clue what's going to come up tomorrow that we're going to have to pivot for?
Right.
That's our world. That's the world we live in. 3 years ago? 3 years from now, no chance of being able to predict what's going to be happening.
So when you were talking about SSL, I remember Log4j, et cetera. When you have these things that you have to work on, it is kind of like a football game. You know who you're playing next week. You know what the issue, around what the issue is, and now you got to spend all the time in preparation preparing for it, right, and doing all the discovery and everything else. But the second that thing's exploited, when you're in the game, anything can happen,
right?
So, and that's where the fire drill becomes a real fire drill. So we'll see come halftime if this offensive tactics that you plan on using come to fruition.
Now, that is where game plan does come in handy, though, because there is going to be an unpredictable nature of the game, but there's going to be certain set ways that you react to it. Think about our incident response plan. That I know something's going to happen at some point, but I already have a game plan on how I'm going to respond to it. It may not call out every single detail of how I'm going to respond.
You have a game plan that gets you close, but it lets you
There's got to be variability.
That you can deal with the situation of the day because you're not going to predict it.
Right.
Yeah. And it's why you do tabletop exercises. It's why you actually go through the motions of your incident response plan. It's why you pull in the executives, right?
Like, and to bring that back to football, it's the same thing as practicing. That's why you're practicing before the game time, that you're reviewing the game footage. You want to understand what you're up against, who your opponent is. But I mean, to go back to the specialized, you mentioned something, Brian, about specialized plays. I do think it's worth calling out that as we put that in the context of security, from a company perspective, we're all not that special. Like, just throwing that out there, that we like to believe that if you see some of the headlines from breaches, oh, it's a highly sophisticated, advanced, persistent threat.
That's code word for we left the guy's account on after he left the company.
Yeah. Or we didn't patch something and somebody was able to get in.
That's the same thing as it was a blown coverage and his receiver was running down the sideline wide open. Right. That happens.
Yeah.
And it gets exploited and you end up giving up seven.
Call it what it is. Blocking and tackling, we missed.
Yep.
We couldn't execute on the basics and something happened.
But now getting
Which on, I think Michigan State's still working on the basics, so we'll see what happens today. But it's all right. I got hope for little brother.
Come on, Dan. Help me out here. Help me out. He literally just said little brother.
Yeah.
I do have a comeback for that, but at the end...
Would you like me to get the bleep button ready?
At the end of the day, though, right, when you just said it comes down to blocking and tackling, right? And there's... and there will be missed assignments. But the last time somebody threw out the little brother comment, the tables turned, my friend.
That is
the
true.
The tables turned.
And that certain fan person may or may not be on the field. Hey,
we got some fans about to pull my mic. Hey, get that Sparty over there some more chili. Woo!
No, it should be a good game. That's the beauty of the rivalry games, that both teams step up and it should be good.
Hey, I want to change topics a little bit.
Go for it.
We are at the very end of yet another Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And we were having, earlier today, was having a conversation with some folks walking by around passwords and other just general hygiene. So for people who aren't in the security field,
and by the way, that's what you get with Dan. So we're at a tailgate at a football game, and he's actually been going around talking to people around here about security awareness.
I may have started it. I literally may have started it.
Yes, I did. I am not guilty this time. This time. All other times, likely. Yes, let's have a party and talk about passwords. But what I wanted from each of you, and I'll provide too, is the single most important tip for people to deal with as they're going into November, as they're coming out of this awareness month, on how to be as helpful as they can for their own lives, from a security perspective, at home, and also at work.
Are we ruling out the password piece? Because I feel like that's still...
passwords are still a thing. We have not all achieved, and actually the
password question was absolutely great, because we had somebody here at the tailgate whose daughter stopped by with a friend, who's freshman sophomore at one of the two universities, I won't say which one, and when the question was asked about how often do you change your password, they were like, I haven't changed it since birth. And then, have you ever had issues with your password? Oh yeah, I've had my Instagram taken over twice, I've had these things happen. It was just one of those great lead-in conversations.
Right. So I didn't start it.
But I think that's why for the longest time, I think as practitioners, we've been saying the password is dead, right? Let's give that up.
It's not dead.
Why is it not?
The password is not going to be dead for a long time.
Oh, I'm not saying we're getting rid of it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not drinking the blue Microsoft Kool-Aid that says, hey, we can go passwordless on everything.
Is there maize with that blue?
There may be.
If it was green, I would drink it.
When I say dead, I think what I'm saying is it's stolen. Right?
Oh, it's okay. Ineffective.
It's ineffective. You're going to leak that password somewhere. I'm sorry. You're going to use it on some website you shouldn't have, or you're going to write it down. Somebody's going to steal. That's why we've been talking about multi-factor authentication and some of those ancillary controls to protect against. That's where the focus has got
to
be.
And that goes back to the blocking and tackling. Like the first step, right? That MFA multi-factor authentication, those are the first steps in blocking the first holes, right? Like if you're going to play some bit of defense, right, set that up. Not setting that up, you're just leaving yourself wide open.
Right.
Those are the little things that, like, when you talk about practice, and I think the more as practitioners, like, people talk about it, everybody should know that. But most of the businesses, consumers back at home, especially some of our elders, still the whole idea of MFA, they're like, what does that acronym stand for?
Yeah, just put it on. When it's offered, use it. And it's a little bit more friction, but it's worth it. All right, good point. Brian, what's yours? What's your tip for people?
In terms of my security...
Your security awareness tip to the world.
If I was to give a security awareness, it's more on the privacy side. There's so much information about you out there today. Think about your privacy. Think about all the social media you're on. And think about the people you're with. And when you're posting information, when you're posting where you're at, where you're going, think about when you're posting it, why you're posting it, and who you wouldn't want to see it, right? And maybe think twice about all that personal information that you create and put public.
I mean, I shouldn't have posted that nobody's at the house, I'm at the Michigan game.
Yeah, and for anyone listening,
I left for Tahiti for 6 weeks. Come break into my house.
Yeah.
But I think there's a good point of privacy that is still forgotten, and more and more and more people are on social media. Like, take TikTok, for example. Like, I'm not sitting here saying be careful of TikTok because it's harvesting all your data and information and going to be used to attack you because it's owned by a Chinese company. That's not it at all. But really think about the idea of TikTok and the algorithms that are being used and how it's used in China versus here, right? And what's shown to people. Because over there's a lot of great algorithms put together to show mathematics skills, to show reading skills, to show people getting along, helping each other. And over here, you got kids watching endless videos, tripping each other, flicking people's ears, parents fighting other parents. Like, you're taking a complete generation. If you could take one whole generation and dumbify them just a little bit, or create some obstinance between them and Discord, they're doing it. And until people talk about it and realize that, right? Like, so my security awareness is more on the privacy awareness. Think about everything it is that you post of yourself and put out there.
My corollary to that one is realize that the people hiring you in 15 years may not also be young and have the same privacy ideals, and the things you do and post may still be held against you.
10 or maybe Hughes against you.
I'm not going to lie. Last year's Michigan State U of M game ended up turning for the Sparties, and they walked away with a win. In that celebration, there were some things that happened, and my shirt may have come off at the tailgate.
Yes, I'm still blind.
I'm not on Facebook, but apparently there was pictures of me on Facebook, and the wife was immediately upset with, what were you thinking? But I didn't even think about the fact that people could have been taking pictures and posting that stuff online.
Well, the advice I give to my kid and his friends is always, everything you do, assume that somebody's got a camera going.
Yeah.
Very true.
It's sad, but true.
But that was one heck of a celebration last year. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'd be very careful doing that this year just because I'm not on my home field. But am I hoping for it? Yes. Do I think it'll happen? I can't go against my team. There's all, where there's a will, there's a way. And that's why, you know, any given Saturday. But I'd love to hear, Dan, what do you, deep down in your heart, I mean, I see the red cords that you brought out today to plug in honor of Wisconsin. Deep down, who is it that you're rooting for today? Is it a Spartan? Is it a Wolverine? Or is it a Badger?
Well, you're lucky it's a bye week for the Badgers.
Why? Because they can't get another loss?
Yeah, that's true, too.
Whoa! Get Eric another drink.
I have no... I have a lot of comments on that topic, but I'm not going to go there here. No, I got to say, I live in Ann Arbor. I have worked in East Lansing. And I got to say that the crew in East Lansing is amazing. And getting to work with that team and that group has been wonderful. And I say go Sparty.
Go green.
Told you. We're going to have a Lee Corso moment here.
Sparty!
There you go. So there you go, Brian.
I mean, I can't say I'm surprised. Dedicated fan over here. Behind closed doors, we've been talking about it all week. I completely am lying, Eric. We have not. I had no idea what he was going
to
put on.
No, I got to tell you, it's a wonderful institution, and getting to work. So now I'm going to go beyond football and say, you know, once you get beyond the beyond the stadium, the amount of collaboration that happens amongst these Big Ten teams is amazing. between academics, internal operations, administration. I just came back from a huge, from a one of the biggest conferences for academics called EDUCAUSE. It's a really great world, and all these organizations are really are playing for the same team. But the team at Michigan State is wonderful. I'm still friends with lots of people on the information security and IT team there. And I wish the football team very good luck today.
I appreciate that. And Eric, I have another green and white hat if you just want to kind of round out the threesome up here.
I'm good. I appreciate it, though. And I was thinking the corollary to that, though, that the unifier, if we're talking about the Big Ten, is when all of the teams come together, is rooting for whoever team is playing Ohio State. So
yeah, that's a pretty good, that's a pretty good win there.
Or Alabama.
Yeah, that's
very true.
That's true, too. Excellent. Well, all I know is it's getting close to game time, getting close to kickoff, and I think it's time to wrap this up.
Certainly.
Oh, but you know what? I didn't give my piece of advice.
No, you didn't.
No. So now that you got all sidetracked by the green. Yes, my advice to people is never be afraid to ask if the weird mail you got really came from them. People, the rise of phishing and ransomware continues. And this is not a plug for email software. This is a plug for human software. You're going to get something in the mail. It's going to ask you something to do something. You're going to get a text message. It's going to pretend to be from somebody important at your company. It's going to have a lot of urgency around it. They're going to want you to act on it fast without thinking. Pause and call and ask that person, hey, CEO, did you really send this? I know it's scary to call the CEO. I know it's scary to call the CFO. Call them up. They'll appreciate it. I promise. A good general rule to work by is your CEO is not going to ask you for iTunes gift cards.
That's 100% true.
And I would add to that, too, the same idea that if it seems too good to be true, it is. And that's not just security, right? That's a general just life practice.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think coming out of this kind of a month, it's been great to work with my teams and people around. And get some of this stuff out. And I think it's time for us to have a guest prognosticator on a greatest recommendation for people to as we come out of Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
And we should just note that Za is wearing the correct colors. So we're balanced.
Well, now it's officially two versus two here. But give us, if you have your monthly cybersecurity awareness training, but advice for everybody out there, what would be the little bit of advice you would give?
Well, I don't know if you guys already, this advice is for everybody, but you gotta train your people, avoid the phishing links all the time. That's basic 101. But most of all is just keep going on training people, and your vendors, oversight of your vendors is another one, your supply chain, that's a big one. Don't rely on your due diligence checklist that you do. You gotta keep on going with them and keep that oversight going.
Great points.
That's wonderful stuff. Thanks, Zah.
Thank you,
really good to see you.
I got a green and white hat back here for you, too.
All right.
That's so true about the third parties too, because I was just looking at a quote that I had here that for Marjorie Doyle, so used to be the chief ethics and compliance officer at DuPont, and said, "Gone are the days when organizations could wash their hands of liability or damage to reputation from outsourced work due to ethics and compliance failures." And it really speaks to, as I mentioned, about the supply chain, the interconnectedness of all of the different players coming together around security and the domino effect of what one incident can cause.
Yep. Literally, automotive coming full circle in supply chain. I love it.
Very true.
Excellent. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up and say thank you, Brian. Thank you, Eric. And thanks to everybody here in attendance at the tailgate. It was great to have some guests. Thanks, Zah. Thanks to everybody here, and thanks to you, the listener. We really appreciate you being part of this with us. We also appreciate your feedback. You can email us at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net. You can find our episodes on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube by searching Great Security Debate. or you can find us on our website, www.greatsecuritydebate.net. We'll see you again soon on the next Great Security Debate.
And go blue.
Go green.